Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Only Podcast. I am your co-host, Austin Smith, joined as always by your other co-host, John Kirby. You can find us on Twitter at ACSmith06 and at John_Kirby. And as always, follow the mothership at Believe Network. Guys, it playoff time. And the road to Vegas goes through San Francisco and Baltimore. This copy feels a little outdated, but we're going to go with it. BetOnline is the number one source for playoff football. Odds, stats, trends, and lines. With everything from point spreads to hundreds of player performance props, head to BetOnline today to stay updated on all the action. BetOnline, the game starts here. Head there today to get on the action and see all the updated odds. Remember to use the promo code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Today is Friday, February 2nd, and we would like to issue an official The Only Podcast congratulations to Super Bowl participant Tabor Pepper. Let's clap it up.
Crowd goes wild. Dude, that's amazing. Like, I would say long snapper, sneaky, maybe the hardest roster spot in the NFL to get.
Because arguably the least rewarding position.
Why? You get to do nothing. Like, that's a sweet gig. They can't even touch you.
You screw your job. If you screw it up, it's such a spectacular failure. If people know your name and you're not, and they're not alumni and psychos like we are of your, or no, that your university, if people know your name for any other reason than that, and you're a long snapper, that's probably not a good thing.
Yeah, that's true.
It means you screwed up on some crazy level.
But nobody screws up. And that's why these dudes in the NFL, they like, once you get a long snapper, it's just like, let's lock him in for, you know, a decade. So there are only like how many spots every year. And he's latched on, and he's on a, you know, a team that is going to contend for a little bit. So good on him.
Well, as you know, congratulations to Tabor. That's just fantastic stuff. That's the only thing we'll say about the championship games in the NFL. No other reason to feel any emotion about that at all, I would say. So, you know, hey, guess we're on to the Senior Bowl. That's pretty cool. That's pretty much all I got, man. I guess we should really just pivot and talk about something else.
I can do that.
Okay. Great.
So, hoops says happening, and on Friday, I'll tell you, I felt like I was in a good spot, like where I was like, okay, this could be one of the better sports weekends in a very long time. And I foolishly let myself go to that place thinking MSU could win a road game at the Kohl Center, followed by, of course, the Lions advancing to the Super Bowl. But we'll focus on the Wisconsin loss first, 81-66. A couple guys showed up. But you know what was weird about this game is, like, this is a good thing for Tom Izzo in my eyes. Stay with me on this. I watched a normal Wisconsin team play. Those names you should know at home: Chucky Hepburn, Tyler Wall, Stephen Crowell, Connor Essigan, and they're fine, and that's a Wisconsin team, right? Like, that's a good core. They're going to play well together, and, like, they're probably going to win 20-plus games. But they're not, like, good. Well, they added a couple of ringers from the transfer portal, and AJ Storr is an absolute stud, and here's why I think it's a good thing for MSU, because – that has taken place. You cannot afford to be stubborn anymore. But there's a compromise in what Wisconsin is doing that Tom can look at and say, okay, just like I don't realize I have been doing, I got one stud from Marquette and Joey Hauser, and then I got a stud from the mid-majors and Tyson Walker. I should keep doing that whenever I need a spot, not just when I feel like it. So I don't know if that's too far of spin zone, but it just looks like Wisconsin has the model for success here, except for we have better athletes. So I think our ceiling is higher.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said for your theory here. The other side of it is that I think what Wisconsin did here is they went out and got a player at an obvious position of need.
That's what I'm saying.
They needed someone who could come in and get buckets, which they, you know, when they have that, they typically are pretty darn good. I mean, was it Johnny Davis a handful of years ago was like, you know, national player of the year. Yeah, I mean, when they have those guys, they're even better. But they do also a good job of recruiting that support system around them. I think Tom's kind of lost the plot in a weird way when it comes to the transfer portal, because I think especially as you look at this year's team, they don't need another like star scorer ball handler guy. They almost needed to do the inverse of what Wisconsin did here and just get more solid support. Because when you look at specifically like go back to the great Michigan State teams of not that yesteryear and look at the center position and look at the power forward position, and you had guys that could score in dynamic ways. You had Nick Ward, who was a walking bucket. You've had, I mean, I'm going a little further back here, but like Matt Costello even developed a back to the basket game. But you just look at the bigs now, and I not to say that it's the biggest issue with this team, because I think there's others, but you get nothing from that position on either end of the court that really moves the needle. And it was so apparent, I think, to just about everybody going into the season that, hey, listen, we saw a lot from Carson Cooper getting better last year. We kind of know who Matty Sissoko is. And, you know, if the gambit is going to be to bet on their development, like, okay, then we need to see something. But we not only didn't bring in somebody to challenge them, but they didn't develop at all. And that's where I think MSU sort of, again, kind of like lost the plot. What are we? Are we a team that develops talent, or are we a team that goes out and gets, you know, players like Tyson Walker, player, you know, I don't know. I feel like Michigan State, like roster building, I says sort of lost its identity. Is that too far?
It is, because at the beginning of the year, it felt right. And then we realized freshmen are freshmen. And I think that's was a big reminder for all of us. We got very excited, but look around and
sure.
Yeah, sure, Xavier Booker is playing way less than other five stars. I guess my point is there are very few freshmen right now that are, above, like, superstar level.
Yeah, but really quickly, my point's not even about the freshmen. It's the complete lack of development from the guys that are supposed to. You knew the fives would be Cooper and Sissoko, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And you would have hoped that you'd see some type of growth in either of their games, and you can't really say that you have. That's troubling to me. That's not normal Michigan State historically. Like, if there was one thing that was an identity for Michigan State, it was we get 3 or 4 year players. You know, the line about Izzo very recently was, oh, how much did he pay to keep these guys around? Or like, you know, Izzo, how did he persuade Miles Bridges to come back for another year? You know, going even back to that, like. And you expected those players to always get better. Cassius Winston got better year over year. Aside from Tyson Walker, I don't really know who in this current team has like taken demonstrable steps to like that internal improvement just hasn't really existed at Michigan State for the last couple of years. And that, if I'm worried about anything long term with this program, is right at the top of the list.
All right. I can see where you're headed. I will say that, you know, while the core at Michigan is kind of here's the deal. Michigan State doesn't suck. Like we are simply taking what's a half season postmortem? Like we are just taking like a mid season autopsy or something. Yes. Like I don't know what you call it, but as negative as we're being, I still, maybe I'm the crazy one, I still see a Final Four team. Do I see a national championship team? No, not yet. Do I think it could? Ah, man, a lot of things would have to break right. But then I lie to myself and say that has to happen no matter what anyway. So, you know, as mean as we're being, I think it's because deep down we know that it's probably in there. Like this, because the steps, like you're talking about, normal steps that you'd expect to see at a Michigan State program for individual players, not everyone took those steps. And it's like maybe we were spoiled because we just expect it to happen. But it, for whatever reason, it didn't. So
I don't know if that makes us spoiled, though.
Okay.
I think it's a fair expectation of a collegiate basketball program, especially, is for the players that you have to get better year over year.
Well,
and to level their game up. And I just don't know how much of that we've seen.
I think that's spoiled because I look around and see guys at Michigan not get any better. Mm. I look around and see Rocket Watts leave and never get any better. Yeah. I think it happens more often because we're just surrounded by.
Yeah, but not at Michigan State.
That's what I mean. It's because of Izzo. Izzo's the guy that gets the most out of everyone, right? And unfortunately, maybe this is the most you can get out of a couple of Maddie and Carson. I think Carson still has more ceiling, but
I
don't think anyone expected the ceiling to be where it's at for a former four-star.
I would agree. Let's talk more about that Michigan part.
Okay, well, we can fast forward because I'm going to tell you, your boy was in trouble on Tuesday night emotionally. I was not in a good place after those aforementioned losses and going into a rivalry game, a home game, a low-key, by the way, must-win game. Because if you lost a quad three game at home, because that's what Michigan is now, dude. They're a quad three win. Yikes. We'll get to that in a second. I mean, it was a first half of like the nightmare is happening went into my head. I was like I would say Michigan got every single bounce except for one for the first 16 minutes of the first half. The one for Michigan State being Xavier Booker's banked in three, which was, I don't know, he deserved it. You know, sometimes he earned it. They hit every single shot. They made every single play, got every single 50-50 like bad bounce from MSU. And it was just kind of like there was that moment in my head, at least, where I was like, oh, this is – so I've died. This is hell. I just watched all of my favorite teams lose in excruciating fashion on repeat every other day. Okay, this is my life now. And fortunately, MSU played to their potential, not even honestly, but played a B game in the second half and blew out Michigan because, I mean, they as we were mentioning, they're not good. So quickly, Austin, does anything you want to get on before we go by players here?
Yeah, I mean, the overarching theme is anytime you can beat Michigan in anything, it's a good thing. I don't care how bad they are. I don't care how good Michigan State is. Beating them it's what you sign up for, right? Like, it's the best thing that you can have. Tale of two halves here, like you said. Michigan State got every single thing possible thrown against them in the first half, managed to still go in only down two. Ended up winning this game by 19, outscored Michigan 48-27 in the second half. And a lot of that, thanks to Jaden Akins going full on supernova, John, ended up with a career high 7 threes. And impressive display. Kind of like the breakout we've all sort of been waiting for with Akins. A big night from him leading the way with 23 points.
Yeah, that was the Jaden Akins that MSU needs to have. Maybe not quite that good, but I mean, we haven't seen that. And we need that if Michigan State has any chance of being that Final Four team. You need Tyson Walker to not have an off game like this if you're playing a real team. AJ played fine, I think. I scored his 1,000th point, actually. Trey Holloman, he's our Doug McDaniel in that he only shows up at home games. So if you are unfamiliar, Michigan was playing without their starting point guard because Michigan plays by its own rules. He can only play at home games because the travel schedule, and only the travel schedule, is what has held him back from his academic potential. So, as we mentioned, I think before, for some reason, nobody else on the team has had the same issue. But regardless, good luck to him in studying. So he wasn't there, and it was just because that is just one of the many things that has happened in the Juwan Howard tenure that is like jaw-dropping, eye-opening. Is this place serious? It is absolutely unserious. Maybe the most unserious basketball program in the country. For all of the insanity that has surrounded the clown show, you cannot look away. And we are very fortunate that they are our rival because I don't know if we would have had as good a seat to this dumpster fire had we not been so close in proximity here to the program. So anything you want to get on the board? Should we start listing off the things of the Juwan Howard era that have popped off the page for you, or how'd you like to go about
this? Yeah, I mean, to call it anything less than honestly, a borderline like dereliction of duty over the last handful of years is putting it lightly. I mean, listen, Juwan Howard did a great job early on of taking advantage of what John Beilein left him. Since then, since he's truly had to like steer this ship, it's been bad. Like, it's been really very bad. Like, the last 2 years for them are border, like, again, you're Michigan, right? Like, this is a program with a lot of, you know, rightfully so, earned pride. But, you know, last year, 17-15, only winning 11 games in the Big Ten.
Think about who was on that team.
Yeah.
Two NBA first rounders and the preseason national player of the year.
Yes.
17-15.
I mean, 2021, they did, you know, make a run to the Sweet 16, but went 17-14 in the regular season. I mean, you know, what you can hand to them is they did make the Elite Eight in 2020. And obviously the year before that, well, it was canceled. But he had some early success. But like, this year is a unmitigated disaster. I mean, they're sitting here at 7-14. They've lost 9 of their last 10. At one point, they were actually over 500, if you can believe that, at 6-5. Their only win is in the last 10 games is against Ohio State. His roster building. Listen, when you hired Juwan Howard, you were worried that maybe, you know, if you had one worry, you're like, this guy doesn't really have college basketball coaching, roster building, collegiate type of experience. Could this come back to bite him? And if you're a Michigan fan that had those concerns, they have borne out in the worst possible way over the last couple of years. I mean, his recruiting classes have been largely fallen flat. He's gotten some decent players in the portal, but really they've lost more than they've gained. And, you know, if you were worried, you know, you're thinking, okay, this year, at least we're going to have Dickinson coming back. He manages to lose Hunter Dickinson in the portal. I mean, that's, you lose a first team All-American type guy in the portal, that's kind of the death knell to your team. We saw it with Keon Coleman at Michigan State football. I mean, it's a similar, if not a much worse indictment of where things stand. And I don't know if you're, you know, Dylan Burkhart, UM Hoops, wrote a pretty, I mean, depending on what side of the fence you're on, you're either awful or awesome kind of diatribe about manifesto about the state of this Michigan basketball program. And they're going to have to make a decision, because the stuff that's followed Juwan Howard around, from his antics on the sidelines, punching coaches, all this other stuff that he's done, and now just the fact that the results on the floor are awful, they're going to have to make a decision here. And they are so lucky that their football program had the year that it did, because otherwise this would be getting way more attention, and it would be an ugly spotlight to be shown on them.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, on the court has been, you know, like you said, a dereliction of duty. The roster building, as you mentioned, the in-game coaching, end of game coaching in particular, I think, you know, you may have seen the stat. They're by far the worst in the Big Ten in one possession games, losing almost nearly all of them. Like, you just expect them to lose close games, and that's, it doesn't become bad luck. Like, at a certain point, that's just coaching. Then you talk about the off the court stuff, like you were saying, between driving around the 80s car, crashing into a light pole.
Yeah.
Lying, you know, ditching the scene, lying about your name, and then playing, you know, immediately after that, which, like, no, which is fine, I guess. But, like, how do these things happen? You know, right. And yes, you mentioned the consistent issues with keeping our hands to ourselves and our words to ourselves threatening to kill. I think, remember the Maryland coach, is it 2 years ago or something? Like, and then recently the rumors of the strength and conditioning coach, just nose to nose rumor. Like, at a certain point, if it didn't happen, is it really that hard to believe it did?
Right.
You know, considering everything we've seen so far. It's just, I'm sure I'm missing some other things that may have happened. There's just been so many. But like you said, at the end of the day, none of that really matters unless you're winning. And that is something they are not. So as you said, you look forward, they have 7 wins. And you're starting to look at, they're going to be favored in their next game here against Rutgers. And then there's a pretty good chance they won't be favored in any game the rest of the season. So that's 9 straight games they're going to be underdogs. You know, it's if you could get to 10 wins, that would be probably a good thing. Like, I would be a little surprised.
And that's not even CBI worthy.
10-21, and that's a really hard – it's really hard to not get fired in that situation, I feel like, considering all of the other stuff. And then you look at his inability to land portal guys. Like, why would that all of a sudden change? And the freshman class coming in is fine, but, like, they're not going to change the program next year. So I don't know, man. Maybe he'll get another, maybe he'll turn it around this year, right? Like, I don't know, but it just doesn't seem, based on what we saw against Michigan State, like, that was not a good team. And, you know, they are better with Doug McDaniel. That is absolutely a fact. And he's a guy that can win you games. But you kind of have to wonder, is he going to take off after this year? Like, yeah. Would you stick around? Like, when a blue blood's like, you know what I need a nice point guard, like, right? Because he's not going pro. So I mean, like, can Juwan retain him? I don't know. It's so many question marks. It's we haven't seen this program in this bad a shape since probably the third year of Beeline's tenure. So that was a long time ago.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, you say, right, like, you know, I don't know. The thing, if it quacks like a duck and swims like a duck, it's probably a duck. And I think in this case, a duck is probably just like a bad college coach. Like, he's just not a good, he's just not built for it. Like, I think it's obvious. The body of work is long enough, and the success that he had came with players that he didn't bring in. He doesn't know how to build a roster. He has not worked the portal very well. And, you know, he can't seem to keep his own players in line. I think, I don't know. It feels to me like the writing's on the wall. And if it's not, it's hard to see how it's not after next year. Personally, I'm enjoying it tremendously. Michigan basketball ever getting good was kind of a nightmare. There was nothing worse than when, I don't know, even though they won the national championship in football this year, I still think my like feeling of nausea during the Louisville game once upon a time was like, I coped very quickly with the football side. Basketball was not like I did not cope well with that. Even after the game was done, I was like, that was too close.
Didn't like that.
Yeah.
Flirted with that. You know, for the Michigan fans who inevitably get a hold of this, please know that we said nearly all of these things about our own football program. So you can go back and check the tape. This is, you know, we pick on ourselves equally. We're just, like you said, it looks like a duck here. So
here's one thing I would, this is going to sound maybe a little ridiculous because I have no idea. I actually don't know how old he is. I don't know what interest he has. He's probably enjoying retirement, all these good things. If I'm Ward Manuel, I am calling John Beilein.
He's not
even joking, man. Call him.
That's what everyone wants.
Well, the fact that you ever let him get out of there is insane to begin with. I mean, I don't have to get, you know, if you really want to get Michigan fans upset, just say the name Ward Manuel. So Ward Manuel. But you can right a significant wrong by just hiring the guy back that you never, ever, ever should have let get out of there in the first place. And it'd be a nightmare for the rest of the Big Ten. I don't know how John would do with the transfer portal, all that stuff, but
he's a
hell of a basketball coach. And be a little piece of sanity coming back to that program.
I mean, like, what amount of money is going to motivate you, a retired, I'm sure, happy individual who has, you know, tons of money? Like, and you call him and you're like, here's the proposition. We want you to come back to your job, and you know, we're gonna pay you more. And FYI, your office is just it is trashed.
Like,
it's you're gonna have to clean everything up. Like that's part of the new job. We're gonna pay you more, but you're gonna be spending at least a year shining that thing up.
So, yeah,
is that a good gig?
Remember that program you took over all those years ago?
Made so beautiful. It took a long time to clean that off.
It's kind of a lot like that.
Yeah, it's terrible. You want to do that again, except for now you're 70? Nah. Like, that's
silence. Listen, but if you're Ward, you got to make the call. You got to try. Like, that's
you
the guy.
You have to say you try.
You have to try. You have to try. I acknowledge that there's about a 6% chance that it would ever happen. If that, I'm probably being too liberal, but I don't know, man. I mean, the program will always hold weight because of, you know what the potential is there, right? Like the potential is team can compete for national championships and compete for the Big Ten year in and year out, but
they have one,
boy, they got a ways to go to get back there. Cause
they have one. Listen,
you've said it before and I want to give you some credit. The Michigan State football, Michigan basketball parallel is eerie at this point.
It's scary. It's weird.
Yeah. Not comfortable with it.
No, I mean, we don't have to go detail for detail, but there's some highlights and lowlights in there that line up. There's the other thing I wanted to say about this team. Let's tie it back to football. I don't know what their identity is. Like, I don't know what they're trying to do out there. I have no clue. And like, I remember last year, they're like, it's an NBA offense. I was like, you sure about that? Like,
is it?
Because no, it's not. I mean, I know you think it is, but you guys are terrible at executing this. So I just like, you know, I have no idea what they're trying to do. And I don't know. they don't even have the athletes to roll the balls out because four guys average over like 31 minutes a night. So like I don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah, I don't either. And the funny thing about what I find hilarious about saying, oh, it's an NBA offense is, dude, they don't run offense in the NBA. It's like just
PNR, baby.
This is literally, what, 30? Is it 32 teams? Is it even 30 or 32 teams times 15 guys? You're talking about the 500 best basketball players in the world. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, we're going to run offense just like them. They're going to – these dudes – like this 38-year-old senior, Jason Llewellyn, or whatever is – I don't even know his full name. Like, he's going to – we're going to make him our Klay Thompson. Like that's not how this works. That is not the way that this is supposed to take place. So yeah, I like that though. Maybe that's just what I'll do at my job. I'll be like, well, that's like an NBA style of sale plan, you know,
that was the best part is like the explanation was supposed to like shut down others by being like, it's too sophisticated for
you. Yeah. You don't understand.
Oh yeah, maybe it's a little above your head, buddy. It's like, okay, do you know what you're talking about, man?
Yeah.
The other thing is, as we move forward, and I don't, you know, we'll jump the gun a little bit just because we love to play the coaching name game. You mentioned John Beilein. Before I'm going to give a couple names, I want to go in the Wayback Machine. And I don't know if you remember when Beilein took off because Dan Gilbert did Izzo a solid and got him out of there.
Thank you,
that's a Spartan.
Big.
Is there the names that Michigan basketball, who are mostly delusional Michigan football fans who've learned about the basketball team, you know, because of John Beilein and invested themselves, were so delusioned to the fact that their, I would say, status as a program that they were, without any irony, talking about getting Brad Stevens to come back to college and have him coach them. Like the names that they were going to get, unironically, make Jay Wright say no. Like coming off of national championships. Like,
hell yeah, dude.
The delusion was like jaw dropping. And yeah, now. But like,
respect, though. Respect. Well, respect for being that far up your own ass. It's like, I commend it. Good for you.
And so fast forward to this time, I was like, well, surely, you know, that was an anomaly of sorts and people now understand the situation a bit better. No, the names I've seen so far, again, without irony, Billy Donovan.
Hell
Billy
yeah.
Donovan to come back to the college basketball. Like, are you kidding me? They're not kidding.
No.
Like, I mean,
he's only been in the NBA for what? 8, 9 years, whatever it's been.
He's itching to get back and
chase
down 16-year-olds.
Yeah, dude. You know what Billy Donovan can't wait to do? Recruit.
Exactly.
He's so pumped to go sit in some kid's living room who could leave like 8 months later for sure. Jeez Louise, man. I have to say, I think it applies to both, and maybe it's an interesting topic. It applies – well, hold on. Before I go into that, were there other names you've heard? Because I would love to pile on.
Yeah, well, yes, there was one more, but I think I blacked it out because I was laughing too hard. It was definitely in the line of Billy Donovan. I'll try and pull it up.
Well, Jay Wright is for sure going to get brought back up if he hasn't already. Like, you know what he'd love to do? Put one of those immaculately fitted suits back on and just get back out there and coach again, man. He probably can't wait. Why else do you leave a two-time national champion? If only to go coach a dumpster fire. I appreciate that. I think there is an interesting like subtext to the Billy Donovan line of thinking there. And it manifested itself this week in college football in almost the opposite way that we're describing. But I think the appeal of a professional and you know, basketball or football job right now, as opposed to a collegiate job, is at an all-time high. The discrepancy between the two in terms of like how much better a pro job is than a college job, the gap has never, ever been wider than it is right now. College basketball, the problem exists on both sides, and it's NLI and it's the transfer portal more than anything else. NIL, you know, you choose. But the fact of the matter is it's going to make middling coaches or like head coaches go take lesser jobs in the pros. Boston College's head coach, Jeff Hafley, been at Boston College for 2 or 3 years, just took a defensive coordinator job with the Green Bay Packers.
That's dope.
But that's the most damning part of like the most damning indictment of anything that's going on in college athletics that I've seen around any of these new things that have come into the game in the last 3 to 5 years. This guy would rather go be a coordinator, probably make less money and go live in Green Bay, Wisconsin, rather than be the head coach of a Power 5 team. That's a hard job to get. There's only so many.
Yep.
And like, I don't know. That was very eye-opening to me this week.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's actually happening in college football too. As you know, like where you're seeing head coaches take coordinator, or even, gosh, who was the coach that just took, I want to say, the Alabama position coach job, who was a head coach in the MAC? Like,
yeah,
that tells you everything about where the head coach, as we've been talking about, college coaches get it. You have to get in the Big Ten or the SEC. You have to. It doesn't matter how you do it. And a guy like that made the decision. You're right. Like, you just got to get out of there if you can. Get the better job, right? Like, don't wait. And
it's crazy, though, because I didn't even think about the conference element of it. But we use the term on this all the time, this show all the time, like stepping stone. Mm-hmm. If you're not in one of those two big conferences, your job, with very limited exception, is like inherently a stepping stone.
Mm-hmm.
And college jobs almost across the board, again, with limited exception, are now going to be seen in a lot of ways as stepping stones to the NFL. It has not, that dynamic has not always existed. There have been, but Nick Saban, perfect example. There have been plenty of coaches who have done extremely well in college football that have no desire to go to the NFL.
Wait, did you see our boy Brian Grubb? Ryan Grubb, offensive coordinator for soon to be offensive coordinator to Alabama until all of a sudden he is an offensive coordinator candidate for the Seattle Seahawks.
And it's this, like, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, dude. It's like, yeah. Yes, please.
Yeah, that sounds sort of a lot better than that.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's all the more reason for the NCAA to figure something out in short order to regulate all of this in some way, shape, or form. Because otherwise, you know, I think you've seen it in college basketball this year with, you know, the product. If you look at mock drafts, this is the best way to put it. If you look at mock drafts for next year, you don't see many college prospects up at the top. You didn't see many college prospects up at the top of last year's either. And I don't anticipate that really changing a ton because they're doing it. They're making it difficult to retain talent on the floor. And the difficulty there is going to lead to losing talent that's on the sidelines. And it's just your product is going to become inferior if you don't find a way to maintain some stability in both of your major revenue sports. It's such a time of turmoil, but I don't know that Jeff Hafley leaving for a coordinator job in the NFL was just like the most damning thing that I've seen in quite some time.
Yeah, absolutely. it's a wild world right now, man. Like, it is. But like we said, it's been a long time coming too. Like, yeah. This is not new. It's just happening. Not it is new. It's just it was kind of obviously going to happen.
Yeah.
So kind of sad. But I guess like we keep saying, being on the right side of it is way better. As a Michigan State football program, you know, as it relates to this conversation. So go get him, Jonathan Smith. You are our only hope. Bringing it back to basketball, Michigan State, yeah, as you mentioned, you know, got the win versus Michigan, quietly a must win. They pulled it off, won by 19, pretty convincingly. Tom Izzo got a 700th career win.
Hey.
That is pretty crazy.
That's insane.
Like you start to talk about the, I mean, he already was an all-time great, but I mean, that is extremely rare error. And you think about how long he's been here when you think about 700 wins. Like, that's pretty incredible. So congratulations to Tom. And as we look ahead here, Michigan State is probably going to be favored in every game but at Purdue to finish the season. So good news there. Bad news is there are some really, you know, no win games in that you can win, but they are a bad team and it's not going to matter. But if you lose, that's really bad. And one of those is the home game against Maryland coming up, currently a quad three game. Maryland playing a bit better lately. So certainly nothing to overlook, but you got Maryland at home, at Minnesota. Feel like you need to, you know, win those types of games if you want to be taken seriously. And then a nice home test against Illinois. Maybe not favored in that one. It'll be close, though. I think that's the next little segment of the schedule where you get to decide, okay, are you guys for real or are you not? You know, they keep getting these tests and they keep failing them. Well, they can qualify for another test in the home game against Illinois if they take care of business against Maryland and at Minnesota, which is very easy. You know, it's on the table. It is not a reach. Home game against Illinois with Terrence Shannon Jr. on the team. If you beat that team, I'm interested in having a deeper conversation about your future. If you don't, we're kind of back at square one and we're going to have to build back up again with a game at Penn State, away game at Michigan, home against Iowa, home against Ohio State, and leading up to the away game against Purdue. You'd like to see three, if not four wins leading up to that Purdue game, and you get another shot to make a real resume building win. If they keep failing the tests, we have no reason to believe that they can do it in the NCAA tournament. You know, like I can keep telling you that it's in there somewhere because they, you know, there are streaks and flashes and, but you got to put it together eventually. And, you know, two more cracks at it. And honestly, if they don't nail that, they're just going to, you know, extend the NCAA tournament streak and that'll be fun. And, you know, we'll hope that they can, you know, pop one top seed in the round of 32 again, and it'll all be done. I mean, that's what you're looking at as far as I can see. But what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you know, at a certain point, you only get so many opportunities to pass the test. I mean, we're sitting here 21 games into the season. We've only got, 10 left?
Yeah, how many times can you take the bar? Isn't there like a number where they're like, maybe you shouldn't do this?
Yeah, maybe a different profession. And so this to me, also I think it's important to note, we're at the beginning of February. This is the time of year when Michigan State always seems to pull themselves out of some self-induced funk and, you know, kind of turn things on.
I mean,
this next three-game stretch is that opportunity this season. Again, we're kind of like right on schedule when it comes to that. Maybe a little behind because we've lost some games. They definitely shouldn't have lost, especially early in the season. But like you said, two games you not just should, but really need to win here if you even want to be eligible, like you said, to take that test again against Illinois. You win these next three games, like you said, you're sitting at 16-8. You're 8-5 in the conference. I think you have some attention, and you know, you might start rattling some cages as it pertains to what you could do in the Big Ten, or, you know, in the not only the Big Ten tournament but the NCAA tournament. But it really comes down to what you know, are you serious or not? Because if you are, these are two games you should absolutely win in Maryland and Minnesota, and then you get a Saturday home game against Illinois, a team you absolutely can beat, a team you probably should have beaten the last time you played them. And, you know, that's kind of it right there. So this, like, I almost, if they fail this test and lose two of their next three, NCAA tournament is very much a question mark in my estimation. And you've got, like you said, games against teams you really shouldn't lose to down the stretch. You've kind of missed a lot of opportunities to make those signature wins with the exception of Baylor. So I think this is maybe the most important three-game stretch of the year to date coming up.
Yeah. I mean, the great news is you look at the advanced ranking metrics, whatever. Michigan State is a decent team, you know, top 20. And great, right? And the reason is because they have all of their losses.
Right.
Seven of them are quad one losses, none of which were met blowout status. And one quad two loss, the James Madison game to start the year.
Yep.
Who is still, while a little behind schedule in conference, a pretty good chance to be an NCAA tournament team. So, you know, they kind of, if you take a look back at it and you're kind of like, okay, like none of these losses are really unforgivable.
Yeah.
But you got to start winning some of them. They're 2-7.
I mean, at a certain point, you're just a good loser. Like,
yeah.
Right.
You're like good competition.
Yeah. If you're comfortable being the best loser in school history, then, you know, hey, you're having a hell of a season. But I like to think that they aspire for more than that. And if they do, then now is the time to prove it. Because I think one thing can firmly be said, that they will get to the NCAA tournament, and no matter who they play, they will not feel as though they haven't seen a certain level of talent. Like, yeah. They've played as difficult a schedule as anybody. And like you said, they haven't really gotten outclassed or blown out. I mean, you and I went to the Duke game in person. They were in that game. They probably should have won that game. You could say the same thing about Arizona. You could say the same thing, you know, James Madison's a different beast. But, like, really the only super disappointing loss this year is probably the road loss to Nebraska. Everything else, you can – yeah, the Wisconsin one's bad, too. I guess Nebraska's 15-6, so maybe I'm misquoting there. But either way, it's not that they haven't played great teams, but just at a certain point, you have to be what you think you can be, or you're just a good loser. And you only have so many chances to change that tune here, sitting here in early February. So, you know, it's time to get moving if you're Michigan State.
Yeah. I mean, this is when, like you said, the MSU starts to hit its stride traditionally. And you're kind of going down the roster. Tyson, I think, is completely on track, averaging 20 a game, one of the most prolific scoring seasons, and on track to potentially be a top 10 all-time scoring season. Sorry?
I said incredible.
Yeah, I mean, he's right there. I mean, on 378 points thus far, he can easily crack the top 10. There's not much you can ask more from him, you know, besides continue to show up and drop 20 a night, right? You keep going down. Malik's at Hall, as we've talked about, has been quietly very good. I would say he has gotten better every year. I think it's just been quiet. I don't think people realize, you know, yes, this is his fifth year, but this year is significantly better than his last. Like, he's very playable. Very good, positive when he's on the floor. The guys that need to take a step, Jaden Akins, like, that's it, dude. Like, you are the key. If he becomes a good player, not just a whatever he's been this year, that's when this team becomes very difficult to play with, because A.J. Hogard has gotten his stuff together. enough so that, you know, he's become almost reliable on offense. The defense is just
not good.
I just can't do this. And it's been four. I can't do it another year, dude. Like, I can't. But
yeah.
Sorry. But then you got Trey Holloman who comes in and locks up, right? So you can appreciate where Trey's development has been thus far, I think, sure. Right? I think you can appreciate where Carson Cooper's development has been thus far, especially given, you know, his starting point. Yeah, I mean, maybe Xavier Booker gets more tick. Maybe Jackson Kohler gets more tick. I think we might see Maddie Sissoko's minutes drop. I think you got to see dip into the Jackson and Xavier pool, see what you got. And if it's not working when they get their 4-minute run in the first half, then you keep going with Carson and Maddie. But I don't know, man. It's you know what you're going to get, and you're not going to like it.
I mean, it's what, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. That's kind of how you have to feel about Maddie Sissoko at this point.
I mean, he's solid in that you know what you're going to get, right? It's never in question.
So yeah, but what you're going to get isn't good. Like, that, I think that's
sure.
If you bad, you know, we've got the guy for you, but.
Hey, man. If your favorite thing's consistency,
you want to know something bad's showing up, by golly, do we have the center for you?
I'll say that he does give his all, and I will say I very much appreciate that. He is always the first one to hit the floor, and if there's anything, I respect that above all else. And there are certain guys on this team that don't see themselves as that type of player, so I really appreciate when he does that. So,
you know what? Exceedingly fair point. And he's gone through quite a bit in his personal life. He seems like a wonderful young man. Take nothing away from him there. But as we're talking about a basketball team, there's, you know, I think we've seen quite a bit and just kind of is what it is. I think the bottom line is one of Akins and Hogard. And like you said, AJ Hogard has done a good enough job over the past, I mean, gosh, really quite some time of providing a consistent offensive presence. That's really not the issue with him.
No.
But there's got to be some other dynamic here. I think I agree with you that Jaden Akins is really the one that could sort of unlock all of this, because he's not a bad defender.
And if he's it, man. Like,
yeah, if he can be an especially plus offensive player, he gives you all the versatility you're looking for. Yep. I mean, it's really incredible.
It changes everything. And the other thing that can change everything is defensive rebounding. Yes. What happened in the first half against Michigan was Michigan really didn't miss, and they hit a lot of very low percentage shots or high difficulty shots, whichever you want to say. And because of that, Michigan State couldn't get a rebound and go. And, you know, that's an element of Michigan State's ceiling. They have to be able to get out and run if they're going to beat good teams. And that starts with defensive rebounding, a thing that Michigan State has just been terrible at this year.
Yeah.
So if that doesn't improve, it doesn't matter. And I don't know how you, at this point, like, are they just bad rebounders? Do they not have the right mentality? Can they just not do it? If whatever it is, if they figure it out, that man, that is an unlocker. I just don't know how, because we've seen two centers simultaneously throughout the Wisconsin and Michigan game, and they still can't get the defensive rebounds on you know, the majority of the possessions. So, like, I don't know, man. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, listen, we're sitting here with 10 games to go in the season wondering why we can't get a rebound. We might just not get a rebound. Like, hoping for that. You know what I mean?
I like that Tom tried something, to be honest. Like,
yeah.
I mean, rather, like you said, I get the joke that everyone's like, you know, why play one bad center when you can play two? It's like, well, for sure, you know, that is true. But I guess, like, I appreciate the idea of, like, look, like, we have to rebound, and I'll just rely on my three guys as plus scorers to make up for the fact that I know Maddie and Cooper won't. score or whatever. So it's a risk. Didn't work out. That's why they lost the Wisconsin game, frankly. And, you know, I don't know what the key is. You think you just have to really ask maybe Malik and Jaden to make a much more committed effort, because I just don't know how often A.J. Hogard is going to stick his nose in there. And Tyson Walker, bless him, but he's getting beat up already, man. Like, that guy, yeah. We need to be a little bit careful, because he's the thing that makes it a supernova. So if he's hurt at any point, like in the postseason, we are in – I don't – it's not going to go as well as we want it to.
I just hope that this team can – I mean, what they lack is an identity.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the thing that I don't know, maybe we've just taken for granted with Michigan State teams, is like the identity has always been tough rebounding team that plays hard defense and is just tough to play against.
Yeah, the defense is not bad, but it's been bad lately. Like, yeah, it's just all of a sudden taking a dip. And like you said, it's defense, rebound, run. Like you said, that's exactly what it's been. And defense has been there on occasion. Rebound has never been there, so run can't happen. So, right, like you said, I don't know what the identity is, because that's Michigan State's identity.
Yeah, and that's the part where, you know, there's twofold there. It's like, one, you know, if that's your identity, it's one thing to say it, but it's another thing to – you got to go do it. And if you can't do it, like, mm-hmm, can you find something else that you're going to thrive at? And I think maybe that's some of the frustration for people this year, is like they're really not exceptionally talented in any way, where if you're not going to do those things, you just have the sheer talent or ability to like overcome it, you know, like you don't have, because you could have reasonably made the argument going into this year with the guards that you're bringing back, like, listen, this team's just going to be able to outrun and gun, mm-hmm, a lot of teams. And we're seeing that that's not necessarily the case.
When they can get out and go, but we can't get the rebound. You know, like,
yeah,
I think, because I would take AJ, Tyson, and Jaden, and especially Trey as a fourth guard, up against a lot of backcourts.
Sure. Absolutely.
Like, that's a solid group.
Yeah, but when they go up against elite talent, it's not enough. Like, go up and down the schedule. You play great team, you know, quote unquote great teams, and it's not enough. So what are you going to find in there that makes it enough? I think that's the question that they have to answer right away. It's not November. Like, we're sitting here in February. Like, there's not a ton of time to figure out this identity if you really want to make another run to the second weekend of the tournament or beyond. Like, it's crunch time, and you just got to, you know, they have no choice but to do something. So it's rubber's meeting the road here, and it starts, you know, Saturday.
I have one solution I'm going to offer. It's the last one I can think of.
Cassius Winston comes back to school.
Close. Play the guy that may make it to the NBA more, Cohen Carr. He is not a negative when he plays anymore. Like, sure, he could play a bit better man defense, but he's not turning the ball over on offense. He knows exactly what he needs to do in his role. And if he's told his new role is just defensive rebound, do not worry about running the wing, you know, to getting down for, you know, a dunk. It's actually more important that we rebound and get it out, and we'll let the other guards figure it out. Like, we don't need the alley-oop dunk, you know, every time. It's nice. We love to see it. But if you just focus on defensive rebounding, he can jump with the best of anyone. Like, I think that is an opportunity he could become the key if he gets more minutes, and that is his role, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, a good way to improve the rebounding is to let the guy who can jump out of the gym go crash the boards. I don't disagree with that at all, and his improvement has been apparent. We didn't even talk about his block, dude, from the last game, where I thought the ball popped when he hit it.
I mean, that was – That was beautiful. That was really nice.
I'm looking forward to the day when he just grabs the ball with two hands out of
it. Yeah. So there are only like a dozen people in the world that have to learn how to do that. And he's one of them. So like he's one of like very few people that can learn how to do that. And if he does, it's going to be the coolest thing we've ever seen.
I think it's a matter of if or of when, not if.
Yeah.
He's going to do it. He's just going to
grab the ball
with two hands and go the other way.
Oh, I can't wait.
If he does that, the other team has to let him go throw down a windmill dunk, one man fast break. It would be one of truly the best plays you'll ever see in your life.
No, those are the rules. And
it's not like, up to us. Sorry.
No, it's like if you get crossed over and you fall down in a pickup game, it's over. You're done.
You just go home.
You go home. It's over. So got anything else today?
No, I think that does it. I'm looking forward to these games.
Yeah.
Get a couple dubs.
Yeah.
We're going to be fine.
I like it.
All right, guys. As always, thanks for sticking with us. For John, for John, this is Austin. We'll catch you next week.
See ya.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.